The numbers told the story. They always do.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. It's all brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. It's Gil Alexander. Jeff Parlay remains here. You doing good, Jeff? You all right back there? Yeah. Thumbs up. He's
doing well.
Doing well. He just can't lift his head up. He just said doing well. Kev, who's in the corner, by the way, I was just telling him I'm on a Ray Parker Jr. kick. What do you know about Ray Parker Jr., Jeff? Just Ghostbusters, that's it?
That's basically it.
Yeah, see, he had sold out by that point. Before that, he was the coolest. Like, when I was a kid, I was like, everything about him was so cool to me. Anyway, I'm reciting Ray Parker Jr. lyrics to Kevin. He has no choice whatsoever. Anyway, it's neither here nor there. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. A lot of tennis, of course. People asking for picks. I'm happy to give them there. We also put them in the newsletter. But anybody who asks, I give my Wimbledon picks. I do it for the slams. And everybody pumped about Cerenko. These are the ones that are beyond tennis here. Chris Hartman, Gil, talking about our discussions earlier on the show, Jeff. Gil, how can Hackett, O'Connell, and McDaniel be such short shots? They all now have head coaching jobs because they were OCs on old teams but didn't even call plays. The learning curve to being responsible for the entire team slash game is a drastic shift. See Staley. Thanks.
I don't know if that's the right argument because
I think it's pretty compelling.
I understand what he's saying, but
they'll still get credit.
If I know Russell Wilson's in debt. Let's take Hackett more than any of them here. If Denver goes 13-4, Russell Wilson's probably winning the MVP and Hackett's probably winning Coach of the Year.
So they'll still get credit.
I don't think the past matters as much for those guys as one would think, but I understand where the tweeter's coming from.
What do you think about the Staley thing? You brought up Staley. We talked a little about Staley off air, which is if the Chargers go gangbusters, by the way, I'm super bullish on the Chargers, and I've always been a Staley guy. I know people love making fun of him last year. I think he'll ratchet the fourth down stuff back this year, I'm guessing. And I think that if they win that division over the Chiefs, Broncos and Raiders obviously also, but specifically over the Chiefs, you don't think he has a shot at that?
You and I kind of disagree on that. I think the Chargers not only have to win a division, but they have to be like 13-4, 14-3 in order for Staley to win that award because I think there's part of the thinking is, well, they should have done something like that last year, and the reason they didn't was because of the quote-unquote analytics, which we know is not necessarily true.
Yeah, people like blaming analytics for stuff that wasn't even
analytics. Exactly.
Matthew Mayberry on Twitter. What I found even more remarkable with the catcher's interference, they said on the broadcast, Jacoby Ellsbury is the all-time leader at 31 catcher interference calls. I am shocked one player did that 31 times. Me too, Matthew. Do you know Jacoby Ellsbury had 31 catcher's interference? My goodness. Let's see. Nick Shea, talking about my conversation with Josh Towers, he goes, someone needs to offer that bet. Yes, no, will four teams from the AL East qualify for the playoffs? Circus Sports, you in? That's what Nick Shea says. Nemesis Enforcer, catcher interference times two. Pretty sure the Nats catcher, Kyber Ruiz, did it earlier this season. Thought it was the same inning. If memory serves, it cost them that game. Then Steve checking in at the right stuff. He says, does Sports Illustrated still do Athlete of the Year? If you can't root for Iga, there's something wrong with you. He's pointing an article, Sviatek hosting a charity event for Ukraine children. We'll read more tweets later. Always appreciate the feedback for all these. Jason Weingarten patiently standing by under a cloud of smoke in Southern California, the host of the Wide World of Weingarten. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Doing very well. Like the trains behind you, man? Little train set. Books. You read every book on those shelves, man?
Almost.
Wow. Jason Weingarten is a reader. I like that about you. What about some of the things we just talked about in the tweets? Have you made any football season-long bets yet?
Very, very few. There's nothing, you know, when it comes to like baseball and I have sort of ideas what I want to bet on, I don't have as deeply thought out ideas when it comes to football at the moment.
Okay. That was your way of saying move along? Was that the way of saying you don't want to share that?
I just don't have anything. I bet like the Vikings to win the Super Bowl or something. You know, like.
Just based on a number.
Not very exciting.
Yeah. Vikings to win the Super Bowl. Interesting.
Because they hired the Rams coach. They have a good core on the offense. Kirk Cousins, you know.
I'm familiar with his work. Yes, I am. Yeah. I am familiar with his work. Just for giggles, where were some of the others? Do you remember what else you bet there, football-wise?
Aaron Rodgers to win the MVP again.
How do you feel about the fact? I mean, this to me is still like one of the big sort of themes looming over football this year that is going to, I think, be a huge talking point, which is Devontae and Tyreek, right? The fact that, like, what ends up happening? Does the team that gets them benefit more than the team that loses them deteriorates? This was a thing, it came up when DeSean Jackson, I know this is going to be a very regional thing, but when DeSean Jackson left Washington to go play, I want to say it was Tampa Bay at the time. That's where he went from D.C. The question was it going to help the Bucs more than it hurt Washington? And I would argue that it hurts the team you leave more than it helps the team often that you go to. I'm curious what happens with those two guys. Obviously, Tyreek going from the Chiefs to the Dolphins and Devontae going from the Packers to the Raiders. I'm not sure where you stand on that.
I think the quarterback is more important than the receivers generally. So a lot of times a guy leaves and he's replaced, you know, by somebody you don't know, but he tends to do fine. I think we overrate receivers too highly.
Even elite ones like that, you think?
Yeah, I mean,
wow. Okay.
Everyone's replaceable in football, except quarterbacks for the most part, and maybe left tackles.
I will be very interested to see how that one plays out, because I'm not sure you and I are simpatico on that thought. I actually have a feeling that, because Aaron Rodgers, as great as he is, right, as great as he is, he's always had an elite receiver. And so now we're at a point where it's like, okay, I know you're great, but can you make this work? I don't know.
My thought in general on the NFL is that outside of about 10 or 15 players every year, everybody's replaceable.
Okay. All right. Wide World of Weingarten, all these thoughts on the Wide World of Weingarten podcast, wherever podcasts are distributed. What baseball plays do you have today?
Got the Braves. Bet the Braves yesterday. Bet them again today. Think you can still get about minus 130 on the Braves. Got to pull it up real quick. Let's see what else I bet. I bet the Orioles today.
Yes.
You like the Orioles?
Oh, I love them. Here's the thing.
Yeah, they're almost 500 this late in the season. Who saw that coming?
No, I didn't. Although the kids are coming up now, finally, right? Like, I mean,
yeah,
that's the thing.
I bet them to win the division this year, probably a year or two too early, but
yeah,
500, progress.
500 is within reach for sure. The thing about them also is they're one of these teams where the Orioles in the 70s and the early 80s, this is one of the great franchises in baseball. There was something called the Orioles way. Like, this was a model franchise. And so you have a whole generation of baseball fans that just know them as the doormat that they are. And they never seem to improve until now. So this is huge for that fan base. And congratulations to that fan base. I think it's only up from here. We on Primetime Action, I don't know if you ever caught it with Matt Brown and Kelly Bidlin, Ryan Mountcastle was like the official ball player of Primetime Action. We love Mountcastle. Every time we look up, he was doing something great, and no one talks about him nationally. So you're on them today.
Yeah, and I'm on the, where's the last one here? Oh, Marlins. Marlins minus 115.
Wow. What was the trio of picks you had? The Braves, the Orioles, and the Marlins. Those are the three. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Are you diving into any adjusted season wins or yes and no playoffs in baseball? Anything like that?
I bet the Reds under a couple weeks ago.
I think you were on the show.
Yes, no
when
playoffs.
Yeah.
I haven't seen very many compelling numbers for the yes no playoffs because we kind of know in the NL, at least, there's only a couple teams that are really contending for the wild card that are outside. So, you know, take your pick, Phillies, Braves, Padres, kind of, who you think's going to make it, who you don't think's going to make it. There's not too many teams outside of that that are going to make big runs in the second half.
Judge hits 62 home runs. This is the Roger Maris prop, if you will. William Hill has this up. Roger Maris, who, of course, hit 61 famously. You ever seen the Billy Crystal 61 asterisk movie? Yes.
Not.
Yes, to hit 62 is plus 350, the no minus 450. You want to?
He's getting close. I mean, I kind of tend to think that later in the season he's going to get less stuff to hit. But, you know, they're playing very well. I would not be surprised to see him get close to that number.
Have you added any Cy Young, NL or AL lately?
I've not. I'm pretty happy with my positions there, so not much I could do with the, you know, I have better numbers than everything that's out on the market.
All right. Just riffing with Jason Weingarten here. Do you have any open championship golf futures that you've made?
Open? No. Not yet. I had the Thigala last week.
Thigala.
Do you believe that?
What number did you have on him?
100. I got it live early on Thursday.
What number?
So wasn't the best number. Still 100-1, but I was watching the final hole with my girlfriend. I was like, watch this. This is not going to end well. I knew it was coming, though.
Did you know that the ball was just not going to go anywhere? Did you know that was
literally
coming?
I didn't want to say it out loud, but in my head, I visualized exactly what happened before it happened.
Oh, wow.
I knew it was coming. Like, I knew I was not going to win.
Why don't you use those powers to the good next time, then, if you have that ability?
I just accepted it and went on with my day.
Yeah. I mentioned Reed Fowler at DraftKings, who's an NFL and PGA analyst. He had the gala at 150-1. And, you know, we had Las Vegas Chris in here yesterday, and we were talking about just sort of, you know, mental health, and not even mental health, but like mental exercises you go through as a bettor, trying to prevent yourself from doing dumb things and how we're all susceptible to it. And it's funny when you miss out on 150-1, particularly in that way. How, you know, and Reed is such a great guy, and he was just saying about, like, well, you know, I have to just focus on the fact that I have a new baby, and you know, your mind goes into those things because it's a coping mechanism, right? Because it's like, how many shots do you get at 150-1, and when they don't come through in that kind of way, it's like, it's brutal. More Jason Weingarten from the Wide World of Weingarten podcast, and right here on A Numbers Game next at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on A Numbers Game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It's Gil Alexander. Jeff Parlay is here as well. The NFL hired its first executive dedicated to the sports betting business yesterday. Jeff, what were the details on that?
Yes, from the Sports Business Journal, the NFL has created a new position called the VP and GM of sports betting. So a vice president and general manager all in one, Gil. They hired David Highhill, who was previously the VP of strategy and analytics for the National Football League.
Has he ever been a bettor of any kind or had a betting background?
No idea. Jason doesn't really say much other than that.
Interesting. Been with the NFL for 10 years, and his new role will task him with leading efforts to protect the integrity of the game from gambling-related harm, advance the league's brand and reputation, grow the value of the NFL's data and intellectual property, and drive fan engagement globally. Word salad. Jason Weingarten is here. Jason, your thoughts on this?
Sounds like a cool job. I want to get paid to do something like that.
All right. Jason?
I want to be a state regulator. This is my dream.
All right, well, let's talk about that for a little bit. So you've gone from wanting to work from a sports book to wanting to be a state regulator now?
Well, I still want to work for a book, but eventually my goal is to be a state regulator.
Could you be a regulator in Nevada, please?
Nah, it's probably going to end up being California.
I'm sorry. I meant to have that still in my mind. Didn't mean to say that out loud. Chris Velika texts in. Chris Velika, the Bear, who was just on the show talking college football with us. He texts in about your appearance here. He says, we need a screen grab of Jason's bookshelf. Have to be some amazing books there.
For sure.
If I were to say to you, it's hard to say what's your favorite book of all those on your shelf, but what leaps to mind right now that interests you on that bookshelf?
Probably what I'm reading the moment. I don't know. There's so many books.
What are you reading right now?
Reading this book called Barry and the Boys. It's about Barry Seal, the drug trafficker / CIA agent. It was a deep dive into his life and researching all the available papers and everything detailed with him.
What would you say is the way that you become aware of books and know that that's even out there to be read?
Typically, I'll be reading something or something that I'm interested in, and then I'll go look at the footnotes or the endnotes, and I'll see that that was cited from another book, and I'm like, well, now I need to read that book. So I buy that book, and all of a sudden I have 14 books.
How many books in a week do you think you read?
So I used to be able to crank out 2, 3, 4 easily. now it's more like one. And I blame a combination of gambling and the iPhone for ruining my attention span.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to blame the Wide World of Weingarten podcast for being a time suck in your life.
No.
No, not that. Okay.
It's the phone has ruined the attention span I once had.
Wow. Interesting. Even an adult, it affects the old iPhone. All right. So golf beyond then the Open Championship, which is taking place in 2 weeks, golf's fourth and final major of the year. Did you bet anything in golf either domestic? Well, they're both in the U.S. actually this week, right? Either on the PGA or LIV or any other golf tour. Did you make any bets this week?
I bet Troy Merritt in the Irish Open, 66-1. I bet Sahith Theegala again in the John Deere Classic, 28-1. Always one of my favorite things you can do in golf when you miss 100-1 or 150-1 the week before, and you can come back bet the same guy at 28-1 the next week. It's a lot of fun.
Just got to do that, huh?
Second time this year, too, that he's blown it late, a big tournament at a big number. Not bitter or anything.
No, not at all. Is this the thing with the Gala, by the way, that you're just going to bet him every week now? Like, are you compelled to do
kinda
that?
Kinda. I mean, the thing is you when you do stuff like that, and I've done it also similarly with Davis Riley this year, is that when you get one of those second places or they lose in a playoff, it's like you just get annoyed having to bet them the next week at a third of the price you've been betting them at.
Well, whenever Davis Riley comes up on this show, I'm compelled to bring in Jeff Parlay. Jeff, what do you have to say for yourself? Jeff Parlay with a very, very adamant insistence on betting on Davis Riley.
I did not bet on him. I did not bet him last week, which was good because that would have been another waste of money. But that's been my guy for most of this year, where other than the majors in last week, it has been take a flyer on Riley, and we should have had it at Colonial. That was the one where the entire field blew up, and then Riley blew up, and then I forget who even beat Scheffler in the playoff that week. Someone from way back.
Everybody wants an ego.
Was Sam Burns?
That's right. It was Burns. Burns, who was way back at the beginning of the day, won in the playoff. That's right.
Everybody trying to chase that ego high. Everybody wants an ego. Speaking of tennis, you're betting Wimbledon, aren't you? I see you're betting Wimbledon a little bit.
A little bit. I mean, I was up early yesterday, so I did some live betting just from, you know, for the entertainment. I bet against Serena. I tend to do that pretty frequently.
It worked
Although
out.
Less frequently because she doesn't play as much anymore.
By the way, Harmony Tan, it just came. Felika just texted me. She has pulled out of her doubles match today because she's so gassed from that match yesterday, and I can't help but giggle. If you watched that thing yesterday, it was absolutely ridiculous to watch. Like, again, a 20-minute game with like the level of competition just seemed so low, and Serena had it on her racket to win it in the tiebreaker. She couldn't get it done.
I fortunately did not watch a single minute of it. I just watched the live betting update constantly.
It was somehow riveting. It was somehow riveting at the same time. So that brings up a point with your bets in general, because we've had this talk, but not necessarily with you. Dr. Bob and I used to go back on this a lot. He wore it as a badge of honor, right, that whatever he bet, whether it was football, basketball, you name it, that he didn't care to watch it. Las Vegas Chris, by the way, was in here yesterday. Las Vegas Chris, one of the great contest players and NFL bettors ever. He doesn't like to watch. He's like, I can't change the outcome. Why go through the ups and downs of it? I used to say with Bob, first of all, I didn't believe Bob entirely, if you want to know the truth. I was like, come on, Bob, you're slipping a watch. I tend to watch what I'm betting. Not always, but I'm not wired in that same way. Where do you fall on that?
It goes through kind of phases. I used to have, you know, TV set up and watch a lot of stuff and have sports on when I was working. Now I don't even have a TV in my office. So that kind of prevents what you can and can't watch, although I can always pull up anything on the computer pretty quickly. It was actually a Bet Bash. We were talking about sweating games in a group one night or something, and I was saying, oh yeah, I don't even watch a lot of what I bet on anymore. You know, I just have the box score up the live box score. I'm watching the scores update or the live odds update.
Yeah.
Someone else said, so you are sweating it, you know?
Yeah.
You're still following it. You're just not watching it.
That's right.
Like, all right, you got a point, whatever.
That's true. 100% of the time, I am at least following the score. Like, I'm never...
I'm always following the stuff on my phone.
Yeah, I'm never betting and then just disappearing on it. That does not happen in my life.
I prefer that over watching a broadcast a lot of times.
Yeah, no, I can get with that sometimes. All right, so...
Especially, like, first innings, just for example, like, when I'm betting first innings, I don't like to watch them because the box score just tells you fly out to left field. It doesn't tell you, you know, 2 inches away from the wall.
That's right, leaping catch, saving a homer. All right, Troy Merritt, Irish Open, any other golf this week?
Not much. I bet the Gala again. I got 28-1 there. I figured,
Are you having trouble finding live odds?
No, I got them. I mean, offshore, I can get them anywhere.
Anywhere. Do you
I just didn't find it very compelling betting field, like odds-wise.
Yeah. Yeah. And the John Deere is a really bad sort of. We're going to talk to Brady Cannon momentarily, but it's not a very exciting field itself this year.
It's exciting if you have any... You know, any long shots that you like to bet regularly, that, you know, there's a lot of guys getting good numbers in that field, but, you know, when you're used to strong fields and top heavy, you know, odds, it's not a great week.
All right. What haven't we covered here in the last minute and a half that you have bets on?
Shohei Ohtani's pitching today.
Oh, why are you saving that one? All right. So you're going
to
have,
I don't know. I mean, how much can we talk about Shohei Ohtani? We talk about him all the time.
That's what I'm saying. We can't keep going to the Shohei. Well, but will you have a bet on Shohei today?
Yeah, I actually might bet the White Sox just a little bit. I see that price kind of getting out of whack. It's something Chris said. I think it was when he was on. I think it was when he was on with you recently. He talked about how you got to separate your futures from your day to day bets to be successful. And I agree with that for the most part. But some situations where, like today, if you have a position on Ohtani and you could take the White Sox big plus money dog, I'm not necessarily, you know, opposed to betting on some White Sox. If they blow up, if the Angels blow up, if Ohtani blows up today, I collect some money up front and, you know, lower my outlay on my futures or whatever.
So are you saying that it does pollute your sensibility sometimes as well?
Or occasionally. I make bets, you know, based on what I'm trying to hedge or get more money down on futures. I'll create my own sort of stuff on a game-to-game basis to impact my futures if I can.
So you will have some White Sox or you will not today?
Probably will. I hope Ohtani goes out there and has 12 strikeouts, 10 strikeouts, throws a shutout. In the event he doesn't, I would like to make some money tonight.
Me too, but I think you speak on behalf of everybody. That's very relatable. We're all susceptible to the long-term bet and then the day-to-day one where we're like, well, I probably should bet this, but do I really want to go through that emotional conflict? Jason, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I'll talk to you later.
Brady Cannon on Golf Next. Numbers.
A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The VSiN Summer Special is here for only $90. You get everything VSiN has to offer from now to the end of July. Sign up today. You'll get VSiN's daily best bets, including Adam Burke's daily MLB best bets, NFL preseason coverage, premium articles on golf, UFC, USFL, and NASCAR. If you want the full VSiN experience, which features a daily best bets email, every edition of Point Spread Weekly, use of our betting tools, and a live video stream whenever you want it, the cost is only $19 to be a subscriber through July 31st. Sign up now at VSiN.com/summer. It's Gil Alexander. Jeff Parlay is here as well. And Brady Cannon joins us at Las Vegas Golfer on Twitter, the co-host, of course, of the greatest golf betting show there ever was, Long Shots. How you doing, Brady? Good morning to you, man.
I'm good. How are you?
Doing very well. You're not in studio because you'll be on the edge later. Is that right?
Yeah, I appreciate you not making me go two trips to the South Point today. Yeah, I'll be down there with Matt Eumanns a little later today for the edge, filling in for JVT this week.
As if I make you any time, Brady. My goodness, the way that came out.
How you liking the new schedule, man? Getting those breaks in the afternoon. That's got to be nice.
Brady, how much time do you have for me to just talk about it? Listen, here's the thing people need to know. I loved doing a show with Matt Brown and Kelly Bidlin. We had such a blast on that show. We're talking about primetime action for 2 years. There are no two people I'd rather do a show with than those two. Matt and I are super simpatico in terms of you know, not in terms of necessarily agreeing on every bet, but in terms of our betting value system, if you will, like we just look at betting in the same way, and that way we're very simpatico. And then Kelly is just makes me smile. Kelly is so much fun to have on a show, and so Primetime Action now, the 2 days, Monday, Tuesday, you'll back me up on this, Jeff, Monday, Tuesday with Ben Wilson, Wednesday, Thursday with Wes Reynolds, and then Friday, Parlay is in there.
You know, we kind of had the first iteration of that show, The Green Zone, way back when. It was Wes and I and Kelly. And you're right. Kelly was such a great addition, a very fun, entertaining piece to that trio for sure.
Yeah, so Primetime Action, again, weeknights here at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. So just to answer your initial question, I mean, even despite that, as much as I love those guys, after 2 years, I just, you know, having a life back is a wonderful thing. So I'll just leave it at that at the same time. Like, both things are true, I guess, is what I would like to say about that. John Deere this week. Not exactly the sexiest field, Brady. Is that an accurate portrayal?
Wow, I think that's probably light.
Yeah.
I mean, we thought the Mexico Open at Vedanta was the weakest field of the year. Well, this has brought that to new lows. But you know what? The positive side of this is a couple things. First of all, it's a really good tournament that a lot of people don't realize. That the players really love this event. It's a very consistent golf course. You consistently get like 20 under par as the winner, and it deviates very little from that. And, you know, proof is in the pudding there. The under or over winning score prop at the Westgate is 263.5, which would amount to 20.5 under par. So they know that this does not differ from 20 under par as your winner very often. The stroke average does not differ very often. It's got very thick rough, pretty wide fairways, big flat bent grass greens, some elevation change, good water hazard. It's just a very consistent product that these players face every year, and the fans are tremendous in their support and their enthusiasm. It's really a good event. John Deere does a tremendous job. Obviously, they're a huge sponsor of the PGA Tour. So, you know, even though the field is not that sexy, tune in and take a look. And there's also a lot on the line. You know, all these PGA Tour journeymen, a lot of them well outside the top 100 in the world ranking. Winning this event means a two-year exemption on tour and also an invite to the Masters. So it's a big deal for a lot of people here.
Let me just ask, before we get to your picks, why is it that this field was so much better 2-3 years ago and not now?
Yeah, good question. It's really because of the Scottish Open, and the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour have now joined hands and have done so even more so as of yesterday. But they went in to co-host the Scottish Open this year, which will precede the Open Championship. And then you had the Travelers last week, which is a very popular event with the players coming off of the U.S. Open. So the John Deere really kind of gets the short end of the stick here, being stuck a tweener, if you will, because I think you're going to get a tremendous field next week for the Scottish Open, you know, in preparation for the British. So that's why it's really watered down this year.
All right. And so Webb Simpson is the short shot at 14-1. The only other person shorter than 20-1 per BetMGM outright odds is Adam Hadwin, 18-1 on him. Sahith Gala, I should mention, is the third short shot. Jason was just talking about him. Our buddy Reed Fowler had him last week at 150-1, Brady.
Oh, God,
150-1. Yeah. He's 25-1.
Well, and that's why I don't necessarily like him this week. I wonder if he's going to be able to bounce back after that brutal disappointment on the 18th hole last week. And now his odds are all the way down to like 25-1. You know, Sahith Theegala is not often in the neighborhood of 25-1.
Yeah.
So I think that price cut may be a little aggressive.
Who'd you land on here outright?
I went with Patrick Rogers. He was my shortest shot at 35-1. This is a par 71, so you've got 11 par fours. He's really good on the par fours. It is a birdie fest. As we mentioned, you're going to need to get to around 20 under par, and he makes a lot of birdies. He's a great putter, and I think that's what you really need here. Accuracy and distance off the tee is not too big of a deal, but you're going to find yourself with a lot of wedges in hand and needing to make a lot of putts, and Patrick Rogers is 18th on tour in strokes gained putting. So he just feels to me like too good of a player, Gil, to not contend in this field. So I went with him at 35. Adam Long at 40-1. He's another excellent putter. He's got top 25 finishes on all the comp courses I looked at. As far as the correlated courses, I looked at TPC River Highlands, Silverado and Napa for the Fortinet Championship, and then also Colonial Country Club. Kind of shorter courses where you need a lot of the same skill sets, I believe, and Adam Long has performed well on all of those. Also a great putter like Patrick Rogers. Adam Shank, great golf name, 57-1. He's another birdie machine. He's had two top six finishes here recently at the John Deere, a fourth and a sixth place finish. And he also kind of feels to me like Patrick Rogers that he's a pretty darn classy player in this field. So I thought, you know, at around 60-1 was a good price. And then also at 60-1, Doug Gim, not the greatest putter, but he's really good everywhere else. If you look at the last 24 rounds, he is second in the field, or sixth in the field, rather, in strokes gained around the greens, and second on the par fours, and then ninth in total strokes gained. And strokes gained around the greens, you know, what you do as far as scrambling and getting up and down has become a very important statistic at this tournament. If you look at the last few winners, they really excelled in that area. So, you know, that was an area I put some emphasis on, and Doug Gim is very good in that neighborhood. And then I took one long bomb on Ryan Armour at 110-1. I mentioned that, you know, off the tee is not incredibly important here, but Ryan Armour is number one on tour in driving accuracy. He did finish sixth at the Travelers and just came off of a 25th place finish at the Travelers last week. So he plays well on this type of course. He's been in good form for the last 3 months. I thought 110-1 was worth a shot.
All right, Doug Gim, and I apologize to Doug Gim and Gim's family here on this, but he's always the name that comes up when I know the field sort of diminishes. Yeah. I'm like, oh, it's a Doug Gim tournament. Any head-to-heads? Did you make any head-to-heads here?
Yeah, I did. I had Steve Stricker for an outright and a head-to-head matchup, but he pulled out. He's just such a machine at this golf course. Also just came off of a second-place finish at the U.S. Senior Open. But I took Doug Gim again here in a matchup, minus 115 over Emiliano Grillo, and then Austin Smotherman at plus 105 over Robert Streb. Robert Streb, in 21 stroke play, you know, 36-hole cut events this year, has missed the cut 13 times, and he's missed the cut here at the John Deere in four out of his last five appearances. So just not a good-looking track for him. I'll take Smotherman at plus money over him.
All right. And 2 weeks out for the Open Championship, golf's final major. What are your outrights thus far, Brady, again?
Well, I played Tiger right after the Masters. I got him at 50-1, and then the odds kind of readjusted last week when the field is now starting to come into form more so, and he reposted at 85-1. So I took a little more on Tiger. Nothing too serious, but I think he's got a shot. And then a more serious bet on Jordan Spieth at 25-1. He's just got a tremendous track record at the Open Championship. And back here in 2015 at St. Andrews, he finished fourth. And then I took a long bomb on Danny Willett at 200-1. He finished sixth here in 2015. And very interesting, 9 months ago, they have the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship on the European Tour. Danny Willett won that, and two of the four rounds are played at St. Andrews. So those are my plays so far for the Open.
Brady, thank you. We'll catch you on the edge this afternoon.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
You too. Brady Cannon, everybody, co-host of Long Shots here on the network. Coming back, Jeff and I want to continue talking about NFL awards. We'll do that next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Yeah.
A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets and risk-free tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas, you could also convert your BetMGM points into MGM rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM rewards, sports betting's premier loyalty program featuring exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks. When you wager on the BetMGM app, sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. It's Gil Alexander. Jeff Parlay is here as well. We will close the show as we started it with some NFL awards. We were doing Coach of the Year earlier. Did we cover all the bases on Coach of the Year, Jeff? I think we kind of were pretty thorough on that. Any other coach you wanted to throw out there at all?
Well, we discussed it a little bit with Tomlin at the end of that segment.
I like
where
it.
If the Steelers, who, Gil, it doesn't matter who's playing for them. It doesn't matter if it'll be Trubisky or Pickett or somehow Mason Rudolph somehow finds his way into that job. The Steelers almost made the playoffs with Duck Hodges a few years ago.
500 or better his entire career.
Every year. They were in the playoffs with Ben Roethlisberger's corpse last year.
Yeah.
If Mike Tomlin finds a way to get that team to win 10 games, make the playoffs again.
AUT-O-Matic, as the great Prince once said.
I think you're in a scenario where Mike Tomlin has to, at a bare minimum, be one of the three front runners. You're getting him at 30-1 right now.
He would have a lot of support for that at that point. In that scenario, for sure. In that division, are you kidding me?
Especially with Baltimore, we're expecting to be better. We're expecting them to look more like the 8-3 team as opposed to the 8-9 team.
Yeah.
The Bengals could go backwards very easily if they don't get out to a great start. And we've only mentioned the Browns situation 100 times, so we don't need to rehash that.
Yeah, it's a little
craziness.
Yeah. Whew. All right. Well, let's look at and I stand by what I said about Ron Rivera, too. If they can somehow, if Washington, the Virginia Commanders can somehow win the NFC East, given all the off-field distractions for that franchise, from ownership to defensive coordinator to name change to regional change on the horizon, that would be a feat for sure for Ron Rivera, right around the 30-1 mark. Biggest thing we can say about, you know, we say it all the time for even games themselves on an individual daily basis, but certainly for awards markets, shop around, because these are vastly different. And with NFL Coach of the Year, my goodness, again, at William Hill, for instance, Sean McDermott is the short shot. At BetMGM, he's not even on the screen for the top 12 that we put up here on the screen, or the top 14 that we have for Coach of the Year. What about NFL Comeback Player of the Year? NFL Comeback Player of the Year, which is available, again, at multiple books as well. You can bet on this. NFL Comeback Player of the Year, again, the most nebulous, you know, the most vague term of all of it. NBA really takes it even further, right? Most Improved Player of the Year in the NBA is the one that sort of throws us off the most, because literally or logically, like, DeJounte Murray probably should have been the NBA's Most Improved Player last year. But the NBA, historically for that award, doesn't give it to players who go from kind of obscure to really good. They give it to players who were already kind of good who get to great. And so if you look at NBA Improved Player of the Year, it's littered with guys that are superstars now. And it's not really logically what you would think that award is. Now, NFL Comeback Player of the Year, there's so many ways to define this. So Derrick Henry and Jameis Winston are both the short shots for entirely different reasons. Derrick Henry, because he had an injury that kept him out of, 9 regular season games, I believe, last year. Derrick Henry's plus 350. Jameis Winston is a short shot for entirely different reason, not necessarily because of injury, I don't think, in the end, but because of the fact that he was once a starting quarterback, obviously, in Tampa Bay, with no real success, most known for his penchant for throwing picks, perhaps, to a guy that sat behind Drew Brees comfortably on a bench in New Orleans, to now the guy there. If he had a great season, he'd be the comeback player of the year. So Derrick Henry coming back from injury, Jameis Winston coming back from obscurity, preceded by meh football play. Daniel Jones is plus 850. His comeback, to use that word, that definition for Daniel Jones would be from really sucky and having a case of fumbleitis and the dropsies to competent and really good for the Giants this year. Let's say if they were to win, just work with me, if they were in the division. Michael Thomas from injury at 9-1. Christian McCaffrey from injury at 10-1. Mitch Trubisky from the expectations of a number two pick in the draft that the Bears traded up to get, to no real success there, to backup years, to now the guy. By the way, we have him with a Bills logo. We should have him with the Steelers logo. We apologize. Marcus Mariota. Okay. Playoff quarterback, backup for the Raiders, starter for the Atlanta Falcons, 12-1. Anyway, you see, for all of these guys, there's a different reason. Baker Mayfield from just getting completely disrespected by his team. And on and on and on till the break of dawn. Who do you like here, Jeffrey? Everybody's got a different reason for why they'd be here.
Well, remember also, too, Jones had had the neck injury at the end of last year as well. So it's a nice combination deal of having a legitimate injury and not being any good before.
If I say Daniel Jones, though, what's the image that comes into your mind?
It's the turnover.
It's the turnover, and it's sprinting with no defender in front of him, 75 yards and tripping over the yard marker. Or the actual line in the field. Do you like anything here?
Not really. That's the problem, because this is really just whatever the people who vote on this want to make it out to be. That's what they make it out to be.
That's always the problem.
So it's really difficult
stuff.
To figure it out. And I mean, keep in mind, last year, remember, Dak Prescott, with about a month to go in the season, was minus what? He was minus 1,500, minus 3,000. He was such a giant favorite. And then Burrow had that one huge game and against Kansas City, and it flipped.
And Burrow came back from an injury that was preceded by, what, 9 or 11 games his rookie year?
He got hurt in week 11.
See, that's why I always had a problem with that. It's because my thing was like, well, what's he coming back from? We're just doing it based on injury. Now, he didn't really have a career, an NFL career before that. Yet, Joe Burrow, so let's do what I was talking about with NBA's most improved player is, okay, we saw historically what kind of player those voters end up giving that award to. And it's not really logically what you would think it to be, literally what that most improved means. Joe Burrow won the NFL's comeback. So let's see if we can be informed by historical NFL comeback player of the year award winners. Joe Burrow's was last year. Okay, I mean, that's a little odd to me, as I just mentioned. Now, the year before that, this trophy should actually be named after Alex Smith. 17 surgeries. Almost lost his leg. Started subsequent to that for the Washington football team, and even led the league in passing yards one of those weeks. Before that, you know, Tannehill, Luck, Keenan Allen, Jordy Nelson, Eric Berry, remember, cancer. Gronk, Rivers, Manning, Stafford, Vic, Brady, Pennington. Oh, there's your guy, Pennington.
So, Pennington won it twice in 3 years.
So a whole bunch of quarterbacks is what that was. So my conclusion from all of that is it really doesn't help us much, except for quarterbacks are always going to get the...
But your quarterback options aren't even that good.
They're not.
I mean, Jameis is your best option, and I don't want to bet him at that price. Daniel Jones, no thank you. Trubisky might not even be the starter by week 4. And that leaves Mariota and Mayfield and Locke. That just sounds like a whole collection of garbage.
The poo-poo platter.
Yeah. I would actually be willing to go way down the board here, Gil.
Not on our screen.
Not on our screen.
Okay.
What about Robert Woods. Robert Williams would have been a good one for this past NBA postseason. What about Robert Woods, who's coming off of an ACL tear? Is in a new spot now where no one is really the guy for being a pass catcher in Tennessee now, obviously with A.J. Brown in Philadelphia. Do you take a shot on someone like that who, if Tennessee is going to be good, they at least need one guy to step up and be a big pass catcher? at 50-1 in a market that's this convoluted? Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I'm stretching here.
You know what, Jeff? You know what my conclusion is from this category? I think we're overthinking it. And I think in the end, it's going to be a really boring choice. And what I mean by that is, it's either going to be Derrick Henry, Michael Thomas, or Christian McCaffrey.
I would say that Michael Thomas is probably the one that I would play. Because I just don't trust McCaffrey to get through a full season.
It's going to be one of the two elite running backs or the elite wide receiver, all of whom are coming back from injury. And the rest of it is just noise. Chase Young, really? Because he got hurt? Like, he's going to get a... No. No. Anyway, these are fun to look at, even in June. The Lombardi Line is next. Dave Ross, Wes Reynolds hosting. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.